Good morning. All right, how many people went to Bourbon Street last night? I knew there'd be a few. Glad you're here. Glad you made it back. Good morning and welcome to our closing conference general session. I want to thank Yara and Valent for sponsoring our refreshment break this morning. Hopefully you had a chance to take in a couple of the breakout sessions this morning. Beforehand, I think we had a pretty good lineup today. Today we honor environmental and technological leaders. We salute our retiring chairman and welcome a new one. And we hear from a speaker who's certainly an expert in the area of retail and retail consolidation. First, we start with the presentation of a couple of awards. ARA is proud to support the Environmental Respect Award, presented by DuPont Crop Protection and Crop Life magazine, to recognize the efforts of agricultural retailers in environmental stewardship. To present this award on behalf of the two sponsors, let me call on Bill Hume. Bill is DuPont's National Accounts Manager. Please welcome Bill.
Thank you, Darren. Good morning, everybody. Pleased to be here on behalf of DuPont to talk a little bit about the Environmental Respect Award and then to recognize this year's 2014 national winner. The Environmental Respect Award that DuPont co-manages along with Crop Life magazine and Farm Chem International has been going on for 24 years. And in that time, they have dealt with applications from 6,000 retailers in the United States. And so it's, again, entering its 25th year this year. And so we're very excited about where we've been and more importantly, what we think we can do to get even more involvement going forward. This award, this movement, which really is a way to honor environmental stewardship and sustainability efforts, has three points that it likes to achieve from a mission perspective. It's to honor all crop protection and fertilizer retailers who are really making a major emphasis on preserving and protecting the environment and being spokespeople for the communities in which they operate. The second thing is really to give a platform to recognizing those who either have achieved an environmental respect award or giving a platform for others to understand how they can get there and maybe and sharing some ideas from one retailer to another. And the third really is just to share the good news about all the work that we are doing in agriculture and all the good work that our retailers are doing on a local, regional, and national level. Oftentimes we talk about that, but it's also really important that we share the news with those who maybe don't understand all the work and the effort and the financial investment that we and you all put into that. So at this time, I'd like to cue the video, then I'll come back with a couple of closing comments. Thank you.
Retail farm suppliers and distributors from 11 countries gathered recently in Wilmington, Delaware for the 24th annual DuPont Environmental Respect Awards presentation.
You have taken the chance to step out as leaders in your communities and in the world's agricultural production system. You've taken the chance to help us and our media partners to create good news for agriculture.
10 businesses from across the globe were named to the Ambassadors of Respect Honor Roll.
These 10 businesses are indeed the role models for the high standards they hold and the great things that they do day in and day out in their operations. And we count on them not only as key connection points for us in the agricultural communities that we live in and that we share, but also we strive to grow together and to bring the best possible products in the best possible manner to the marketplace with the best possible stewardship commitment. From Russia, please welcome Svetlana Dolabey-Ridzeva, Adharsh Agarwal, Director of Anuradha Enterprises of New Delhi, India, General Manager Varol Oho from Atlantis Terram, Andrea Kubaski of Castorlandra Agro-Industrial Cooperative of Brazil, Tatiana Spich, Quality Manager of Chemical Agrisava, Serbia. From Korea, please welcome the leader of the Technical Consultants of Chumbuk Agricultural Cooperative, Ildong Zhang. Please join me in welcoming John Cullen, Managing Director of Dalby Rural Supplies of Queensland, Australia. Please welcome General Manager Ruby Tanya Cruz of DC Cruz Trading Corporation in the Philippines. From Farmex in Peru, please welcome Alfredo Ojeda. Danielle Ceciva, President of Podlish of Rio Negro, Argentina.
The United States winners were honored in three awards categories.
The Environmental Respect Award for Land Management Professionals honors those that preserve and protect the environment while helping control brush, invasive weeds, and vegetation along highways and near power lines, utility areas, and industrial sites. This year's honoree hails from Oceanside, California. Please join in welcoming Land Management winner Mike Enan, Enan Weed Control, Oceanside, California. The Spirit Award is presented annually to honor a past regional or national winner for their continued energy and enthusiasm towards environmental initiatives, as well as the sustainability of their stewardship commitment over time. Having grown up in the area, location manager Tommy Engel is particularly protective of their environmental practices. CPS Centerville is a 1992 regional winner. Please join me in welcoming Spirit of Respect Award winner Tommy Engel from CPS Centerville.
This year, an impartial judging panel selected five U.S. regional winners. They were judged the top out of a pool of 150 businesses demonstrating leadership in compliance, proper application, and facility safety and security.
You represent the best of the best in our industry, and environmental stewardship is critical to our industry. Because you know what? We can have great products, and we can have great science. If we don't have great people that are backing those products, if we don't have great customers that are representing that chemistry and representing our industry in the manner in which you represent it, we don't have a business. We don't have this program, and we don't have the opportunity to bring you here and say thank you.
From these five businesses, one was named the DuPont National Environmental Respect Award winner.
And our 2014 U.S. National winner is Centennial Ag Supply Company, Yuma, Colorado.
Let's get them all up here.
Centennial Ag Supply in Yuma, Colorado. We service about 300 customers out of that location and a little over 60,000 acres. We do full-service ag retail there, anything from application and delivery to agronomy and recommendations, precision ag, liquid fertilizer, a little bit of dry fertilizer, and crop protection. The farming in Yuma, Colorado is pretty darn progressive. The majority of it is irrigated, probably 60 or 70%. And they're big operators. They're 3,000 to 5,000 acres, and it's definitely a high-yield environment. There's a lot of guys that are diversified and have livestock operations along with corn-raising operations, and so a lot of the corn that's raised in Yuma County goes to those feedlots that are in Yuma County. Environmental respect is all about sustainability for us, sustaining the natural resources that we have surrounding our locations so that the communities that we live and work in are going to be here for tomorrow, and those resources are going to be here for our customers and our employees to service those customers in the future.
Our congratulations go out to all of these businesses and for the work of DuPont Crop Protection in honoring their 2014 Environmental Respect Award winner.
Great. Hope you enjoyed that. Usually this would be the time when I would present, represent the award to the 2014 winner, but unfortunately, Jim Fargo and Eric Johnson of Centennial Ag Supply are not able to be here. But for those of you who know them, please make sure that you recognize them. As you can see, this is very important to DuPont. And again, we're entering the 25th year with our partners from CropLife Magazine and FarmChem International. And we couldn't have done it without them. And Darren, thank you and ARA for allowing us to get the opportunity to just to get the word out and to share the recipients, because it's important. It's you. And with the deadlines for this year are April 6th, and you can always go to environmentalrespect.com for applications. But again, Thank you, Darren, for the time.
Thank you, Bill, and congratulations to Centennial. 2014 marks the first year of the ARA Ag Professional Magazine Precision Impact Award. The award is presented to an individual for excellence in incorporating precision ag equipment, providing expert data analysis and recommendations, and overall superior customer assistance with advanced farming technology. To present the award, I'll call on Rich Keller. Rich is the editor of Ag Professional. Please welcome Rich.
As Darren said, this is the first year for these awards, and it's regional. There are three regional winners. And the companies that are recognized, the judging panel said it was really close in trying to do this. There was criteria that were used: input efficiency, grower engagement and encouragement of customer use, stewardship for the environment, overall innovation, use of precision technology, and then bottom line profitability for the company and customers. So really, I'm going to let the winners tell you about their operations in the shortest precision ag introduction you've ever heard. They each have about a minute and a half to tell you how their operation ran. So if we can roll the video.
When I say Precision Ag, Southern States has made a completely new commitment to Precision Ag. Within the last year, we've established a Precision Ag division with a vice president and some newly imported employees to our roles who specialize in those services. Stephen Harrison and the latter service are obviously at the top of the pile in Southern States as far as Precision Ag offerings.
Yeah, I think it's a partnership that we have with our growers. You know, I'm blessed to be in a very progressive area where we have progressive growers that are generally concerned about, you know, their returns on investments. You know, they're looking for partners, you know, to help them put the dots together in precision ag services. In connecting the dots, we start with the basics. We do various EC mapping, and then we'll go out and we'll do variable rate zone soil sampling, and then we'll spread variable rate fertilizer and lime based on those soil samples. Then we'll take our same information and create variable rate seeding maps, and we'll follow it through with aerial imagery of NDVI imagery, and then we'll follow it through to yield, and we'll take that information and we'll do trend analysis with our proprietary software.
We always knew there was a lot of variability in the soils, but we noticed that there's definitely different productivity, so we developed a central advantage program to help manage that variability in the fields. We show a strong value to our customers by bringing them solid yield results with good recommendations, and that's why we've been so successful with this program and continue to grow.
Central Valley Co-op has 7 agronomy locations stemming from the southern tip of the Twin Cities down to the Iowa border. We implement our central advantage program through all of our locations, and we have about 5 different other staff members that specifically work for Central Advantage, collecting data, analyzing recommendations, and helping our customers with technical support. We're able to take multiple layers, whether it be yield data, planting data, as-applied data, soil sample information, and compile it into a database of information where not only do we just create variable rate fertilizer racks, we do variable rate planting racks, management zones for different applications, and give you an actual results of what actually happened on that acre. Was it high population that caused the corn to go down, or was it lack of fertilizer application? We're able to really fine-tune each acre with this program to figure out better management practices to follow on each individual acre and field. Central Valley has created a nitrogen program called their Nitrate Now program. We're able to take real field results, actually be able to tell what the actual nitrate levels are in that field, and give them a recommendation.
Now it's come to where we're at today with a web-based system we've developed completely in-house to manage all of our precision ag data, machine logistics, anything related to precision ag. Our MZB system that we've developed over the years really takes a look at multiple layers of information. We look at Varis EC data, we look at elevation data, and we look at satellite imagery, and we delineate management zones based off of those three layers of information that are like areas of the field that we manage separately. So in a typical quarter, we would look at 6 to 7 management zones that really mean something unique, and they have different yield potentials based on those zones. Company-wide, all 22 locations are using the logistics system, which is tied into our cloud-based MZB tools system. So our sales agronomists can work up the prescription for the producer, send that prescription to a dispatcher at that location, and it's up to the dispatcher to choose the machine that's going to do the work. Wirelessly through the cloud, transfer the prescription files to the machines, capture as-applied information coming back to our servers. We have a very, very dedicated employee group, whether it's the GPS hardware sales and support individuals, or it's our agronomists that are making recommendations out there in the field using our MZB system.
After one of the agronomists goes out and signs up one of our producers for an MZB program, that's where I would come along, or one of my colleagues in the precision ag side of things. We would help them get their equipment ready to variable rate, whatever seeding or prescription, fertilizer prescription they may need. We sell them the equipment, we'll install it if need be, and then come back and service it in season. Along with that, we help them load the prescriptions that MZB would provide.
So at this time, I'd like to have Stephen Harrelson with Lata Service, Southern States Lata Service, come up and receive the award on behalf of the company. And on behalf of Central Valley Co-op in Minnesota, we've got Kevin Cruzy. And accepting the award for wheat growers of North and South Dakota is Brent Weisenberger. And we really appreciate that we were able to put this together with Ag Retailers Association, and we look forward to continuing this program.
Thank you, Rich. Congratulations to the three regional winners. Throughout the year, I get to work with some outstanding people on our board and in our officer corps, and I want to call our current chairman, Gary Farrell, and our incoming chairman, Dave Dufault, up to the stage for the traditional passing of the guard. You always form a great bond with the chairman during the year, at least that's the goal, and it certainly happened this year. Whether it's Gary giving me a bad time when Eastern Washington beats my Oregon State Beavers in football, we tend to talk trash back and forth about that every now and then. But we've had a great year, and I'm pleased to turn over the podium to these two gentlemen to recognize Gary's service and inaugurate Dave's term as chairman.
Well, thank you, Darren. I have to say it's been an honor and a pleasure. I'd like to thank the staff and the board. They've all worked very hard and diligently on your behalf this year. We've made some great accomplishments. One of them, I think, is showing here today that the number of people at this event is an all-time record. I think we had, what, Darren? 798. So thank you. That goes a long ways. So with that said, once again, it's been an honor and a pleasure to serve, and I certainly look forward to introducing you to your new chairman for the coming year, and I'm sure he will do a very wonderful job for you as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gary. But before you run away too far, you know, Gary's had some real challenges and done some great work this past year. You think about Responsible Ag, where Responsible Ag has come from a year ago, still thinking about it, exactly where it was going to go, to having a meeting in Dallas, really getting two organizations together to really form a bond and really start the organization of Responsible Ag. So with that, Gary, we'd like to thank you for your services this past year and your leadership in guiding us through a lot of those challenges. So thank you, Gary.
Well, thank you once again. So with that being said, I'd like to introduce Dave Dufault. Dave grew up on a family farm in northwest Minnesota. Dave graduated from North Dakota State University with a Bachelor of Science degree in agronomy and a minor in ag business. Dave began his career in 1989 as a crop advisor for Simplot in East Central Forks, Minnesota, or East Grand Forks, sorry, Dave. Dave held many positions with Simplot over the years, and in 2007 was named the Vice President, General Manager of Simplot's retail division, and then moved to wonderful Boise, Idaho from Minnesota. So Dave is also the chairman of the Ten Coast Group. So let me introduce to you your new chairman, Dave Dufault.
So we just had the shortest introduction for the Precision Ag Awards. We're going to have a real short speech right now. But like I say, I want to thank Gary for his work. We still have work to do. You think about Responsible Ag, where we've come from and where we're going. I think one of the biggest things that we have to accomplish moving forward, especially this next year, is really taking what we're doing in Responsible Ag. And we talked a little bit earlier about taking it out of our communities, taking it out of just this agribusiness, out of our ag business community, into the general public. If you attended some of the breakout sessions yesterday on the Responsible Ag, they talked a little bit about our industry, our image in this industry, and we have some work to do there. So what can we do from a communication standpoint of Responsible Ag to TFI to ARA, and to all our members to really take a look at where we go with Responsible Ag to really improve our image out there in the U.S., so in our rural communities. You know, Mike Vandelot talked a little bit about some of the mistakes made. Some of the mistakes made early in the 80s and the 90s regarding new releases, new genetics, new technologies in seed. And how can we learn from some of that as we develop this Responsible Ag program and develop a better image. So with that, amongst that, we have battles to fight in D.C. We know that. We're reminded of that every day. We have a great group in our ARA team. Darren, thank you. I look forward to working with you in this next year as we continue to fight those battles and really give us the freedom to operate each of our retail locations. So look forward to the next year. Thank you, and thank you for attending a great conference.
Very good. Thank you, gentlemen. I am really looking forward to introducing our keynote speaker this morning. In fact, if there was one wall that I might want to be a fly on, it would be this gentleman's wall, just to hear what's going on and what the plans are. And so we thought, let's introduce him. Let's invite him to come and give him an opportunity to tell us what it's all about, and he graciously accepted that invitation. So Kenny Cordell is president and CEO of Pinnacle Ag Holdings, which operates in the ag retail space under the Jimmy Sanders, Providence Agriculture, Ag One Application Services, and Invictus brands. He is a native of Mississippi, was raised on a cotton, soybean, and livestock farm, graduated from Mississippi State in 1979. That was before they became a football powerhouse, right? But they're really good this year. And his career has included employment at Roman Haas, BASF, FMC, and United Agriproducts. He resides in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, with his wife, Kathy. They have four children and five grandchildren. Please join me in welcoming Kenny Cordell.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Well, thanks to the ARA for inviting me, and I'm really excited about being here. It gives me an opportunity to talk to y'all, have a conversation about who we are, what we're doing, maybe set some of the rumors to rest. God has blessed me. I've got a wonderful family. He gave me away. I know y'all had already picked up on the South Philly accent. My wife and I reside in Philadelphia, right outside of Philadelphia, with all of our kids and our grandkids, and talk to you a little bit about the things that I'm passionate about. Started off with family. They're important to me. But God has blessed me. I've been in an industry my whole life that I love. I feel very fortunate that every day I wake up looking forward to going to work, and so many people can't say that. So I do love this industry. And this is going to give me an opportunity to talk a little bit about the industry, about Pinnacle, and my opinions. Now, this is going to go a lot better. I'm going to try to keep it short and then open it up for questions. There's no way I can guess what y'all want to know. So be saving your questions to the end. I'll try to answer them. If I don't want to answer them, I'll tell you I'm not answering them. But for the most part, I think I will. I know a lot of you. I think a lot of you know me, but I have a little story I'll tell that kind of will let you know a little bit about what some people think of me. There's this teacher that was trying to teach her kids colors and flavors and fruits using lifesavers. So she's teaching elementary kids, and she pulls out a red lifesaver and says, "What color is it? What flavor is it?" And they said, "That's red, it's cherry. Orange, it's orange. Lime, it's lime." You know, went through, and they picked up real quickly on their flavors and their colors. The next day, she came in with a tube of lifesavers that were honey flavored, and she passed them out and said, "Now, who can tell me what this is?" And all the kids just looked at them with a blank look on their face. And she said, "Well, I'm going to give you a hint." She said, "It's something that your mom often calls your dad." Little girl spit one out and said, "My God, he's feeding us assholes." So at least I know, now y'all know what my wife, she would agree. So let's get started. A lot of the stuff I'm going to show y'all isn't profound at all. We've all been in it for a long time. We know what we are. We're retailers. And what do retailers do? We're the interface between suppliers that produce and manufacture products and the grower, our customers. We truly are the only ones that are unbiased, or should be. We should be. What's passionate to me and any company I'm involved with, we're always going to put our customer first. If the customer's successful, if he makes money, we'll make money. So we always have to put best agronomy first. Now, we'll talk a little bit about that going through about what I mean by best agronomy, but, you know, I worked 20 years for suppliers, and they do make American farmers the best there are in the world. R&D, technology, the things that we've brought to our customers in a competitive global market. You know, I grew up 4 hours north of here. 30 bushel beans was a huge crop. We didn't even attempt to grow corn. It was just too hot, too dry. Today, this year, my brother-in-law cut 85 bushels of beans on 3,000 acres. My cousin cut 207 bushels of corn on 1,000 acres. Things have truly changed. And R&D manufacturers who did that, they make us competitive. At the same time, they can't be unbiased. Monsanto is a great company, and they have great technology, and they have great hybrids, but they don't have all of them. They do not have all of them. Pioneer, you could say the same thing. I worked for FMC. We had some great products. If I'd have caught one of my salesmen saying karate was better than capture, I'd have fired him. But sometimes karate's better. So what does a retailer do? A retailer with his relationship with his customers. That's where the value is created. You should be unbiased. You should always recommend what's best. Some of the speeches, I have strong opinions, and I agree with a lot that's said. I disagree with a lot that's said. You know, weather is a big, big part of our business. And I hear all this talk about big data and what it's going to do to help us predict weather and what we're supposed to spend and how we're going to spend it and how we're going to earn return. Goodness sakes, we're in New Orleans. 3 days before Katrina hit, who knew what was going to happen? So I have a real hard time believing that we're going to model weather and predict it and decide how to spend our money based on that weather. I hope it's right. I hope it is. I hope if it is right, I live long enough to see it. But I am skeptical. I believe that normal weather is the average of 10 screwed up years, 10 screwed up geographies. There's no such thing as normal weather. I think you have to put yourself in a position for your customers to optimize their economic yield. I think you start off not eliminating any potential opportunities the grower has, and you adjust on the fly. You spend money that'll earn you a return, and you don't spend money when you won't. Now, that doesn't mean you don't, you know, that you ignore the forecast. This fall, if I had this big bean crop that we just harvested here, and it was saying next week it's going to rain 5 inches, you can bet your behind I'd be trying to hire some custom harvesters to get that crop out. But I'm not going to be making decisions in December based on a model for next year, what I think the weather's going to be. Personally, I'm skeptical about that. So, at any rate, we'll talk where I do believe big data works as we go forward. Let's see. All right. I hope that's the right slide. Don't think it is. I'll do that several times through this presentation. I'll get way ahead of myself and then have to come back. If y'all came to listen to a real buttoned-up, smooth presentation, you're in the wrong place. So, I meant on this slide to talk a little bit about Pinnacle and who we are. Pinnacle is a holding company that 2 years ago, me and three guys sat down with Apollo and said, we believe that we can build a national best-in-class distributor. We posted a website and we started a company, formed a corporation, and in November, we made our first acquisition, Jimmy Sanders. And thought that that would signal the industry about what we were trying to do. We followed that on with G&A Seed, and since that time, 28 acquisitions. At the same time, we've opened 30 greenfield stores around the United States. We're going to be a national best-in-class distributor. We're now operating in 23 states. Within a year, hopefully we'll be in all the major ag-producing states in the United States. We have several brands. Pinnacle is a holding company. We have on this slide Invictus, which is our products business. It's not a generic platform. It's a value-added platform. And one thing that $8 corn and $15 beans did for us is it allowed us to really look at and do research on a lot of nutritionals and micros and things that 10 years ago we called snake oil. Good times allowed us to try a lot of new things, prove out a lot of new things, and a whole new platform has developed out of that. So nutritionals do pay if you use them at the right time in the right place and you have the data to support that. Seed treatments are a fast-growing segment. So Invictus is more of that's our products business. We try to create value-added products that are proven and tested and are known to drive a good return on investment for farmers. OptiGrow, that's our big data. OptiGrow, I think when we bought Sanders, we had roughly 6 million acres of history on farms. Everything from soil sampling, grid sampling, nutritional history, the history of insecticides used, hybrids planted, soybean varieties planted, and it carried the yield on a large, large part of it. We do, in OptiGrow, we have a department that does small plot trials, headed by Dr. Chisholm Craig, a PhD, a solid, solid scientist, and at the same time, we test and do strip plots with our customers and carry everything to yield. If something doesn't pay, we don't sell it. And it was frustrating. When we first bought Sanders, and I was all raring to go and saying, let's sell this, let's sell that. Sanders saying, no, let's test this, let's test that, let's prove that it works. And I said, my God, you know, this stuff has been used for 20 years. Not in this mixture, not in this formulation. We're not selling it if we don't know it works. So that's what we use OptiGrow for, is we gather data, we look at the history, and we don't share that data from our customers individually to anybody. It's their data. On the other hand, we make a lot of decisions based on the aggregate data. What hybrid works on what soil type, at what latitude, and what irrigation pattern, and at what planting date. When our people go and sit down with their customers, they can tell them what we believe that the data shows us the best option for them to grow on their farm to optimize their yields. All right, what else have we got? There are a couple of new ones on here. Meridian. Meridian was announced today. It's our new wholesale platform. We'll be launching a wholesale distribution company. Tell you a little bit about that business. Is I know I'll offend some people when I say this, but in my opinion, Pinnacle has an opportunity to create the first distributor, not the best, not the biggest, but the first. Now, by most of y'all's definition, a distributor is somebody who buys from Syngenta, who buys from Monsanto, who has a contract with a basin. I guess in ag, that's been the definition forever. But when I look at a distribution business, I'm not comparing myself to Pioneer or Monsanto. We're nothing like Monsanto and Pioneer. We don't invest 10% of our sales waiting on a return 20 years from now. Not as a retailer. A retailer invests in people and assets to create value today. Today. We make significant investments to do that in working capital, plants and equipment, rolling stock. But it's all short term. It's a high cash flow business. So if you want to know if you're doing well as a retailer, don't look at Monsanto's financials or Syngenta's financials. Look at Granger's. Look at Airgas. Look at Walmart. Look at Lowe's. Look at Home Depot. They're all distributors. They all buy and sell stuff. They all turn their cash quickly. They all earn a return on the capital they have employed. If you want to be best in class, measure yourself against best in class. When I say be the first distributor, what's the local grocery store? Do y'all have Piggly Wiggly's, Food Giants? Think about it. You go buy a can of green beans, and as it goes down across the register, electronically it sends a supplier a message that you just sold that product. Inventory was just relieved. We don't have anything like that. We're selling pesticides. And after it leaves the supplier's warehouse, and notice I said supplier's warehouse, not ours, not distributions. When it leaves the supplier's warehouse, you lose visibility totally. Totally. Why hadn't our industry embraced barcoding? Why haven't we embraced true distribution, true visibility of inventory, from soup to nuts? Why didn't a supplier manufacture something and send it straight to one of a distributor's spoke and hub warehouses, just like Procter & Gamble does with Walmart? Why didn't Procter & Gamble plan their materials management and their production based on real-time information, looking at real inventory and when it's sold and plan their production? I've talked to a lot of y'all. I had a guy ask me yesterday, why do suppliers allocate everything? I got a question for y'all. If everything is sold out, why do we all have 25% inventory today? Because we don't have any visibility of it. We don't track it. We don't do the job a distributor should be doing. We all, when I order something for one of my retail stores, it comes out of a public warehouse that Syngenta sent the product into, and they'll send it to me in pallet quantities. They'll send it to you in pallet quantities if you're buying it from a wholesale distributor. It's not what a distributor does. It's not what they're supposed to do. We've got a public warehouse system sitting on top of us, between us and our suppliers, that's making an 8% return. They don't have any skin in the game. They've got a steel building. Steel building. They have no risk. They're making an 8% return on our inadequacy. So, I said we started a company. We're building a products business. On top of that, we're building a distribution network, spoke and hub across the United States. A lot of people look at us like we're crazy. We're opening a 300,000 square foot warehouse in Des Moines January 1st. We don't own a business in Iowa. We're leading with assets to support a distribution business. We will have barcoding. We will have real inventory management within a year. So we're intending to build a best-in-class distributor, and that's what I mean by it. Another thing about technology, how many of y'all rented a car when you got here? Imagine a bunch of you did. When you got there to the counter, did that person working behind the Avis counter impress you as being much smarter than all your people? They don't ever impress me. But they give me a car, and it takes them about 15 minutes. When I get back, I pull the car in, give them my keys, and 5 minutes, I'm leaving with my bill in hand. All done electronically. All done with handheld computers. So it's time for our industry to embrace those types of things. We need to become more efficient. We've got to become more efficient. I'll talk to you a little bit more about what I mean by that. We're in a great industry, and probably you've seen all this before, but that great industry has allowed all of us to prosper and all of our customers to prosper when really, and don't take this as an insult, really in spite of ourselves. This is a great slide. It shows what the industry's done, and we all know the fundamental reasons. You can take this all the way back to the Depression. That crop input business has grown at greater than the rate of GDP since the Depression. Now, that is a great business. You can't find a five-year cycle anywhere in history, beginning to end, pick any 5 years that the ag input business hadn't grown more than the national GDP. You don't find many businesses like that. So we've all done very well in it. And it's a little bit tough, but if somebody wants to predict the future, I would bet on an 80-year trend line that's probably going to continue. It's a great business for all kinds of reasons that we always know, that we already know. Population growth, shift in caloric intake, shift in diet in developing countries, growing population. We've all heard all of it, and we know that we work in a noble industry. We're trying to feed a hungry world, and we don't have any more land. In fact, land is decreasing. with all Chicago growing into prime farm country in Illinois and that fine area of Philadelphia and all the vegetables we could be growing if the city just quit growing. But land's going backwards, population's going up, diets are shifting. We can't possibly do it without growing yield, increasing productivity. Well, our suppliers are doing a great job of that. They're bringing new hybrids. They're bringing new varieties. They're bringing new technologies that are making everything explode from a yield standpoint. And it's a great thing. They're doing their job. It's time for us to do ours. Distributors have to focus on efficiencies. Now, I'm going to back into some numbers here for you. I've spent half my career working for suppliers, half my career working for retail. A profitable business, what does it look like? What does a good distributor look like compared, or a good retail location look like compared to any other good retail business at Airgas or at Granger? Any of them, you name any of them. Well, I'll tell you in ag what it is. A good retail store will sell between $10 and $15 million. Anything less than that, I'm telling you, is going to be very difficult for you to earn a return that's better than what you could do with your money in the bank, and you're going to have substantial risk that you're going to make that. So you start with the business ought to be a $10 to $15 million business. Now, if it's bigger, great. But it needs to be $10 to $15 million. So I'm not going to tell you anything y'all don't know. But what does that $10 to $15 million, what investment do you have? We bought a lot of things, looked at a lot of things. A very well-run business will average about 20 cents of working capital. Best in class will average about 15 cents. So that $10 million store that I just talked to, on average, has $20 million or $2 million of working capital invested at it on a continuous basis. That $10 million store, depending on whether it's full service or not, is going to cost you somewhere between $1.5 million and $3.5 million of fixed assets and PP&E. All of y'all know those numbers are true. So every location we have represents about a $5 million investment. We're in a $60 billion industry and we got 9,000 retail stores. Guys, the numbers don't work. They don't work. It's in a $90 billion industry. It's a $60 billion industry. We've got at least 30% too many stores. More than likely, 40 to 50% too many stores. Then convert that into money. Convert it into money. Working capital, it's not going to double if you cut the stores in half per store. You can get a bunch of working capital out, a bunch of PP&E out, to the tune, if you were against the comps that I'm talking to you about, you would have cut about $25 billion of investment that we're asking our customers to allow us to earn a return on that we don't need. That we don't need. Money's not free. All of y'all are borrowing money. I'm borrowing money. It costs you about 5%. So the interest on our inefficiencies alone are costing us more profit as an industry than CPS and Helena make combined. More money than CPS and Helena make combined are spent in over-invested inventory and receivables. So it's time for us to get focused on it. I talk about how important our people are. Our people are where the value is created and the relationship and the value they give their customers. The average retailer spends roughly 10% of their sales dollars on people. They spend 6% of their revenue on interest for not running their business the way it should be run. Just trying to scale things for you and help you understand the task we have ahead of us. Our customers owe us a living when we do things right. There's not one thing wrong with making money. That's what makes the world go round. I know there's some people here that disagree with me. This is a good time for you to leave. I'm here to make money. I'm here to help my farmers make money. So that's something we need to do as an industry. Consolidation, this is another thing that's real interesting. It's necessary. If you look at those distributor comps that I talked to you about, one thing that you'll find in common in any industry you look at, whether it's roofing, pool supplies, home goods, you name it, anything that you buy from a manufacturer and sell to a consumer, this distribution, number one and number two will exceed 40% market share every time. You can't find an example where number one and number two in a distribution business in the United States don't represent 40% share. There's a reason for that. In distribution, where you have no barriers to entry, that all your value is created by the relationship you have and the integrity that you create between yourself and your customer, that's where your value is. In that case, economies of scale are tremendous. They're tremendous. So when you grow your top line and your fixed asset base is fixed, you make a lot of money for your shareholders. So the numbers are stacked to say in distribution, the number one and two player are supposed to be dominating. They've got economies of scale that nobody else has. They can make more money. They can buy better. They are more efficient. Not in our industry. CPS is huge, has over 800 stores in the United States. Whole nother debate whether they need them or not, but they got them. They have 12% share. Helena is a great company, great retailer. Add the two together, they're less than 20%. So number one and number two combined to be less than half of what any distributor you would ever look at. But then again, I'll remind you, I said we don't have distributors. Syngenta is the distributor. Syngenta manufactures and ships to a public warehouse. Syngenta ships to our customers. So we don't have a distribution network. And until we do, we're never going to gain the economies of scale that anything else we look at would have. So that's something, again, this industry needs to consolidate. This slide really talks about big data, and it is being addressed in lots of ways. It's amazing to me. The strides that equipment manufacturers have made and the things that it's exposing. I mean, you got a monitor on a screen that's telling you real-time yield, and you can look at what you're doing everywhere. It's giving growers the information they need to help make their decisions. So technology is here to stay. It's going to grow. This big data is going to be the next thing that leads us into the next level of efficiency we need. But from my perspective and where I'm setting, go back to what I said at the very beginning. The thing that's the most important to me is my customer's success and my people. So the data, to me, is a way to put my people in a position to provide their customer with the best thing that grower can do at any point in time on any issue they're dealing with. So all this other stuff is just window dressing. That's the part of big data that I'm interested in, that part that creates real value for the two groups of people I care about, my people and my customers. So, and I'm sure you feel the same way. Do y'all love y'all's competitors? I don't. I don't love my competitors. I don't think they love me. Hard to love somebody that, or have them love you when they know that you're spending all your time trying to put them in a soup line. So I think I'm wrapping it up. That's it. So I said it when we started. I'd love to answer any questions you have. About Pinnacle or our brands or what we're trying to do, or be happy to try to answer anything. And this thing's going to get real short if y'all don't ask some questions. either y'all didn't understand anything I said or you don't care. So, well, thank y'all very much for your time. And look forward to getting to know all of you better in the coming years. So thanks.
Kenny, thank you very much. I do have a speaker's gift for you. Kenny, thank you very much. I appreciate the time you spent, and I certainly enjoyed your presentation. And hopefully he'll be around for a few minutes. If you do have questions, want to talk to him in the hallway or something, catch him and ask him your question there. That brings us to the end of the general session today. The general session this morning and lunch to follow are sponsored by CoBank and by Pinnacle Ag Holdings. That lunch will be upstairs in the 8th floor Armstrong Ballroom. It's the same place where the AIRPAC dinner was last night. Either of the banks of elevators behind you will go to the 8th floor for that event. Those of you going on the port tour, meet in the lobby at 1:15. That's when the bus will arrive. It departs promptly at 1:30. We have had a few cancellations on that tour, so if you did not get a confirmed seat and are still interested in going on it, please show up down there at 1:15, and we'll try to get you on standby. So if you're interested, be down there at 1:15 in the main lobby. We hope you enjoyed this year's conference. We're already making plans for 2015, and we hope you're making plans to join us. Next year's meeting will be December 1st through the 3rd at the JW Marriott Desert Springs Resort in Palm Desert, California. We hope to see you and many more there. Until then, safe travels, best wishes. Thanks for being here.